Hello, everyone, and welcome to the PPC Show brought to you by AdStage. I am Paul Wicker.
And I'm JD Prater.
And today is April 1st, 2019, and these are your top headlines in paid marketing. The first one, this is like mind-shattering. Can you believe this?
I'm pretty happy, actually, with this one because both of our predictions are coming true at the same time.
If you haven't heard yet, it just broke that Amazon and Google are now in a bidding war over Snap, and Snap will be acquired by the end of the day from either Amazon or Google. Amazing. So yeah, we're both right.
I know. I mean, what do you think it's going to go for?
Well, I bought all that Snap stock, so I'm going to become a bazillionaire because it's, I don't know, sell for like $4 billion, $5 billion, $10 billion. We heard $10
billion. 10. I think 10 is reasonable. I mean, did you buy it when it was like at $5 a share or did you buy it?
Of course. I took $1 million. I leveraged my home. And I bought $1 million of Snap stock.
I took out a second mortgage.
Right. I actually sold all my possessions. I am now living out of a rented car, a get around, because I sold my car.
I'm all in on Snap.
Did you sell all your possessions as well?
No, I like all my possessions.
Okay. All right. April Fools, everyone. This is obviously not true. Sorry.
Not true.
Fake news.
That was a good one. That was a good one.
Fake news. Speaking of fake news, Facebook introduced a new ad library. So all that stuff they've been doing around trying to bring transparency so you can see all the ads that people are running, specifically around political ads. They were doing a lot of like political and news kind of ads being visible to everybody. They're expanding now into this new fancy ad library that I checked out. But have you looked into the new ad library? Have you creeped on anyone yet?
Oh, yeah. I'm creeping hard. I've been creeping on Beto, you know. I'm actually really impressed with this. You know, I think you and I, a couple of months ago, whenever they, you know, they took out Politico's ability to go, ProPublica.
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 Yeah, ProPublica used to scrape website and like build a database, and they canceled that program saying, you know, it's shady, you shouldn't do it. We said, well, you know, is it that or you don't like all the fake Well, because they didn't take out the fake clicks on like page likes. They just took out the fake opening of the menu that has the this information. But anyway, we did say Facebook needs to do more. It looks like they're doing more.
Yeah. I mean, it's really impressive. So, you can go in there. You'll get more data if you type in like a bigger company or if you type in a politician. So I typed in Beto O'Rourke and I'm actually like really impressed. Like it tells you when his page was created, which was August 29th, 2011. And he's only had one page name change during this time. And he has spent $8.5 million in the last year, which I think is just staggering. And you can even do like spend details. You can break it down. You can see he has right around 14,000 ads that you can take a look at. So really impressive as far as the ad library. You can break it down into geo. You can see that he is targeting women more than men, which again is interesting as far as like when you think about his strategy of who he's trying to reach. So go check it out. It's pretty fancy.
Yeah, there's two things I was going to mention. One is, you know, we gave Facebook a lot of crap for kind of not having this before they cut off ProPublica, but it does seem like they're moving in the right direction. And especially the whole, like the fact that you can see how many times someone has changed their page name means that there's something spammy people were doing like to get things approved and then maybe changing them. It looks like they're even trying to bring some transparency to some of the like more spammy practices. There's something about the country too. So you can see where the page is managed. So obviously with all the Russian collusion stuff happening, people want to know if like their favorite news source is actually being run out of Moscow. So they're attempting to try to bring some clarity to that. And it's going global. So right now there's, I think, US, Brazil, a few other countries have this. But basically Facebook is trying to move, like roll this out globally and, you know, ahead of most elections. So I think ahead of the parliamentary elections in the EU, or somewhere in the EU, they're trying to get this in place. I will say also, I don't know, did you read Zuckerberg's like comments in Washington Post?
Yeah, I caught you know, I caught him. I think he's right on a couple of things. Are you talking about the, you know, need for regulation and like a better internet?
Right.
Yeah. I think he was right on a lot of other things. I think it's a really hard thing. It's a really hard problem to solve. Yeah. For those who haven't heard, you know, so he outlined, what was it, like a couple of points, 3 or 4 points about what he was really wanting, you know, basically the world to kind of focus on. And by the world, it means like countries, governments, because it's really difficult for, you know, for example, Facebook to operate in 190 different countries with 190 different rules on what is okay and what's not okay. And think about internet usage. So, hey, let's have a standardized way in which we can kind of look at it. So that much I kind of agree with. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's always super logical, and this article is, he goes through his 4 points. He wants transparency reports, like required by all major internet services. He wants third-party bodies to get involved to do some like governing and regulation around what is harmful content and how to measure companies around the amount of harmful content they ship. So it does make this a little bit of a, it's not just us problem, it's a problem for the industry. So I think he makes that point pretty well. And as usual, when you read it, you're like, yeah, this all makes sense. And it also makes you feel like Facebook is spending a lot of time and money trying to get this right. I forget the number, but there's like hundreds of people doing editorial reviews. They're trying to set up an independent body. So, you know, it's in one ear, I have Kara Swisher on, you know, Recode or on Pivot, just like slamming Facebook. And the other ear, I have Mark Zuckerberg like, hey, we're doing everything possible. And probably they're somewhere in the middle. We'll land somewhere in the middle. But Kara Swisher would say, it doesn't matter that this is a hard problem. You created the Frankenstein. And now that it's out there, you know, terrorizing villagers and burning down shacks or whatever Frankenstein did. Now you're saying, well, we're trying hard, but, you know, genie's out of the bottle. So how are you going to solve this? Or should you be shut down? You know, dramatic things like that.
Agreed. And I think one of the things too is he's putting the onus on governments, which, as we all know, is going to lead to like nothing. Whenever, because he has the power and the authority really to make this change if he wanted to within Facebook. So to Kara's point, you created it. You could actually fix it faster and easier if you wanted to.
Right. And in some ways he's trying. I mean, a lot of the transparency report Facebook is doing, a lot of these like measures he's saying Facebook is doing, but he's saying, I can't fix it by myself. Even if Facebook is fixed, Twitter will still be broken and every other new social network and, you know, fake news and propaganda, like these are kind of bigger issues. But so the Facebook saga continues, but meanwhile, those ads keep performing. So keep running those ads.
Yeah, it's very true.
Other news, Pinterest, they are filing for an IPO. So Lyft just IPO'd, although you told me their stock tanked today though, right?
Yeah, it was up on Friday. We had some good internal betting going on to kind of see where we thought it might net out. So, you know, I think they started out at $72 per share, ended at around $78 per share. And as we are talking at this very point, it is at $70.03. So it's down $8.26 since Friday, which that hurts.
It's did you sell all your possessions and invest in PIN?
No. But that said, I do think they have a much better business model. You know, looking at what Lyft's, you know, kind of their financials and how much money they were making, you know, so they were around like $2 billion in, you know, revenue, but, you know, they were losing around $900 million, you know? So like that's like two-thirds, you know, like not even two-thirds, you know? I don't know. Anyway, it's like a third. It was a lot of money to be losing. And so that one I didn't like as much, but I did think Pinterest, they had a much better revenues, you know, like what is it? $750 million. So they're on their way to $1 billion, which in the grand scheme of digital marketing is still like less than 1%. Of actual spend, but still it's really impressive that they've been able to, I think for me, tell a consistent story and get advertisers on board for that story. I think now we're seeing them moving more into a performance marketing DR focused and getting better with actual reporting and measurement. But something that caught me off guard, I didn't realize they had to share numbers in the US and international. Did you see these numbers?
I did because you shared them with me.
That's right. Okay. So, it's like flat, like basically, you know, Pinterest has been growing. We know this, they're at 250 million, monthly active users. But they haven't really grown in the US. So if you look back into Q1, 2016, they had 65 million. As of Q4 2018, they only had 82 million. So they only netted out 17 million active monthlies. But international is huge. They went from 63 million all the way up to 184 million. You know, like that's massive, 120 million new users in that 2 year span.
Yeah, it's crazy that back in, you know, January of 2016, their user base was pretty much even, 65 million users in the US, 63 million international. And I don't know if someone said, hey, let's go international. And they had some big debate. And it was a very wise move because, yeah, US, I mean, up to the right, just slow, 65 to 82 over 3 years, versus, like you said, international just really is growing. I mean, 184 million users. I wonder what market, do you have any clue where that international growth is?
I have no clue. I'm going to guess it's got to be Europe. I mean, it would be my guess. And then particularly probably other English speaking would be my next guess from there. Right. Most companies, you know, once you break out of the US, you're going to probably focus on Canada, Australia, the UK, you know, Ireland right in there too. So I think this is probably where most of that growth is. And then you kind of throw in Europe for other English, maybe English second language, like France, Germany kind of stuff.
Right. Well, we could always read the S1. So if you didn't, I slipped up on the names before. So Lyft has IPO'd and their ticker symbol is probably Lyft. That's what JD was talking about. Pinterest, whose ticker symbol will be Pins, applied for an IPO. They have not IPO'd yet. So we could take bets on their share price as well, if you'd like to play the IPO betting game. Their S1 is public, so you can go read their S1. I did read portions of it. Apparently, I didn't read the part about international growth. There were a few things, a few notes I wrote. One is how they position themselves as a productivity tool more than a social network. I thought it was pretty interesting.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, especially as like there's a billion productivity apps these days. So I wonder if it's just like Snap calling themselves a camera company and just a repositioning, or if they truly invest more in trying to turn Pinterest into a productivity tool, not just a way to save and store and buy. They do have in their S1, they're like a top four brand in the US, which no one believes. I mean, come on, with all the US, but Google, Apple, Facebook, Microsoft, you're telling me your brand is up there? I don't know about that. But whenever people put stats like that are like seemingly totally incorrect, it makes me think how much of this filing is filled with. I'm sure it's true. There's some study somewhere that someone did that they ranked fourth, but in like some demographic. But come on now, folks, you're not in top four. Sorry, Pinterest. and then let's see. Oh, in terms of marketing, we talked about it on the show, but they added product catalogs to Pinterest back in March. So you can use, you know, feeds of products to create product pins. There was an article, I forget where from, because I didn't link it, but they were pretty critical about Pinterest though as an ad format, that, you know, the people buying on Pinterest is still very tiny. They've pivoted a few times how they're doing like purchasable pins or buyable pins with product pins. And Instagram, meanwhile, is just like growing and growing and growing. And there was a stat that a typical retailer gets traffic from Pinterest and it converts at twice the rate of other platforms, which is great, except the amount of traffic from Pinterest is usually less than 1% of the retailer's total traffic.
Right.
So they're making good, slow, steady progress, but it seems like compared to Instagram, who's just like moving 1,000 miles an hour, it's going to be tough for Pinterest. And then the last point, video, they introduced video on Pinterest, I think it was last year, and someone was trying to count how many ad formats they've introduced. And in the last year, they've went from about 4 or 5 ad formats to around 20. So they really are trying to get the ad model right.
Whoa, 20. Dang. Woo.
Yeah, it's a lot of changes. Okay, that was a lot of Pinterest. Whew, it's the most we talked about them.
Yeah, it's true.
Speaking of people we don't talk about ever on the podcast, Adobe was in the news this time.
Yeah, they had a, what was it? Their Adobe conference. What is the name of that conference? But Adobe Summit. Ah, okay. All right. Adobe Summit 2019. And they are going all in like with this ABM type of approach. But I think more than anything else, they're really looking to partner, which I thought was a really like smart move on their behalf. So they're doing this collaboration with Microsoft and LinkedIn. Of course, Microsoft owns LinkedIn, and it's really going to help out all you ABM people out there doing some account-based marketing to hopefully kind of bring in what I guess it's called Adobe Experience Cloud. But how do you market to them maybe while you're on Bing or on LinkedIn by pulling that data in? So I think it's actually a really smart way to kind of break down some of those walled gardens and allow some of that data to come in from other companies and able to then target based off of it. Makes complete sense to me. And I think it's actually a really good move.
Their press release was just filled with mumbo jumbo that made no sense about, you know, seamless alignment to identify, you know, people with meaningful content. But I think it's just retargeting. I think you can just use your audience from Marketo. So Adobe bought Marketo. I think this is their way of getting Marketo CRM. Mm-hmm. into the ad tech stack. So you can use your Marketo audiences to do audience-based targeting on like LinkedIn and Bing. But you know, the official term is the alignment of key data sources through Experience Data Cloud, Marketo Engage, and Microsoft Dynamics 365 for sales. I don't know any of that means, but if you're using Marketo, it's probably good news because you'll probably be able to just create audiences on LinkedIn and Bing at some point in the next 6 months.
Yeah, I think that's probably the future. I think like what they're doing, I think is only going to become what we're going to see from a lot of other platforms as well. I know with Facebook, you can do this to some extent with, you know, some of your email lists with native integrations, but I think we're going to start seeing more of these CRMs and even more of these marketing automation systems rolling into our ad platform. So that way we can actually target people where they are without having to like constantly update funnels and email lists and audiences where, hey, I synced it. If you're in this bucket of audiences, this is what I'm going to target you with. So that way you're really kind of focusing more on the orchestration of it, which I like.
It does. It seems like someone would have solved this problem already where you use one system as your CRM, maybe it's Salesforce or Marketo. And then when you change your audience lists, it just goes everywhere. Facebook, Google, LinkedIn, Bing, display, you know, everybody's segments get updated. You know, at Stage, we thought about playing in that space because we have, you know, API hooks into all those folks and we can create audiences, but it starts getting very quickly into this PII, you know, individual targeting, kind of a lot of negative press around it right now, negative sentiment. So it's a bit of a risky place to be if you're trying to move data that's essentially, you know, human level tracking data around the internet. It's kind of a different space than AdStage plays in. So we took our product to the, we're not going to go there, but we will let you, you know, move your conversion data around, your aggregated conversion data, because we care about clicks on ads. And, you know, we're not going to kind of touch the human tracking part of it. We'll just focus on the ad tracking piece. But so we'll see. We'll see if there's a really clear, compelling solution in the market at some point in 2019.
Be continued. Dun, dun, dun. Well, dun, dun, dun. Did you see Salesforce is going to get into the CDP, you know, customer data platform? Or wait, is that right? Customer data? Customer data platform. Yeah. They're building out one as well. So, you know, what we thought it may have been a passing fad, but if Salesforce is getting in on it, I think they just like completely validated that entire market.
Yeah. I'm like, isn't CDP just a CRM data that's got like some, like, personal data layered on top of it? But I guess we need a new segment. So it's not enough to have CRMs and have folks layer on that data. You now need CDPs and CRMs. But yep, it's what used to be untouchable. People would say, oh yeah, we don't look at individual data. You know, if you were following the market like 5 years ago, it'd be like, oh no. Individual data is bad. That's creepy. It violates personal privacy. And now it's like the standard. Oh yeah, we want to track everything about everybody.
Which is a perfect bleed-in to the MarTech. How much should you be spending on all of these CDPs, CRMs, ad stages of the world?
Yeah, there's a ton of data. There's this article is super useful. So if you're a startup and you're trying to figure out your budgets for marketing tools or any marketing team, I guess, this is really helpful. It's from a search engine land. And they reference two other studies, one by Gartner and one by a company which I now forget, but it'll be in the link. I got both the white papers because they're really interesting data, and there's too much to go over here. I think for me, the bottom line was it gave you a good understanding. I think the number was somewhere around like $1,800 a person. So if you're in a company of 50 people or less, you should be spending like $1,800 on average per person on your SaaS tools. That was one study. The other interesting thing is they show you over time, like where all the spending has gone in terms of categories, like how much you're spending on HR tools versus marketing tools versus engineering tools. And historically it was like dominated by engineering, sales, and like business ops, you know, like payroll, I guess, and stuff like that. And then over time from like 2010 to today, now there's a category for everybody. So HR has tools, CS has tools, product has tools. So it's really, and I assume in this bar chart, like sales means Salesforce, like people were spending money on Salesforce for years, but it's really Salesforce, your engineering team, and then some of the, you know, business operations stuff. So interesting data.
Yeah. I was looking through, I was just like, wow, like this is like, one, it's really good to actually think about how much you spend per employee, like on SaaS, which I have never really thought about breaking it down like that. So, I think it's pretty good. I think in some cases we're underspending, and a lot, probably in some cases we're overspending. So, I think all overall pretty good data.
And the one point I'll make on Gartner too is if they looked at 2017 to 2018 spend just for marketing departments, so looking at the CMO budget, and basically the CMO took a little bit of money out of labor, out of the paid media budgets and agencies, and moved, you know, a few bucks out of each one of those over to MarTech. So the spending on tools went up while everything else kind of went down a bit. So it seems like marketing teams are spending more and more money on, you know, marketing technology. So it's worth it. Go buy AdStage. It's totally worth it. You're supposed to be doing it. In fact, if you don't, you'll look really weird at the next cocktail hour with all your marketing friends. So two other quick ones. So Unilever, I don't know if you read this one. Unilever, yeah, basically is like, you know, like a major brand, and they're trying to increase brand safety by creating this concept of like a trusted publisher and building their own network of trusted publishers. So some bigwig over at Unilever, who's apparently retiring soon, kind of just got on the soapbox about how for their main brands like Dove Soap and Hellmann's Mayonnaise, they want control and visibility over ads. So they're going to do some of their own work in validating publishers to get rid of some of that ad fraud.
Yeah, I mean, so this one I thought, again, it was tough to read, right? Because you're like, yeah, go get them, Unilever. Like, you are like one of the few companies out there that, you know, actually has the ad budgets, you know, probably billions every year that can actually make a difference. And so they're like, okay, cool. So you're just going to focus on quote unquote trusted publishers. Cool. I'm with you. Can you tell me who they are? And they declined. Nope, we can't tell you any of these. Okay. Well, who said this? Well, it's the soon to retire CMO. Like, like, is this going to change after he retires? You know, his name is Keith Weed. He's been really outspoken, and I actually kind of like a lot of the stuff that he says, and I love how outspoken he is. But is this going to just end up being nothing, right? Is this just like a PR play?
If you think about it too, you know, they're saying, hey, we'll only spend money with these trusted publishers. Well, who is most trusted? I mean, you can't be more trusted than Google and Facebook and Microsoft. And well, where do you think like most of the ad dollars go? And, you know, when things end up on shady channels on YouTube or AdSense or Facebook's on some, you know, weird page on Facebook, you know, so who's going to be on that list? And, you know, Facebook went down for a day, and we talked about it a few weeks ago. Something like $53 million in ad revenue didn't get spent. So assuming there's good ROI on at least some of that $53 million, you know, that was one day of not having ads on Facebook. So as a major brand, every day you're not advertising, you know, you're losing millions of dollars. So I can see how they talk about like, hey, we're going to do this, but you know, whoever's the product manager who's like, hey, I got to sell more soap. And when you turn off all our like ad spend, I don't sell as much soap. So we're going to lose a lot of soap dollars.
I know. I mean, but I give him credit. So like the things that he's calling out that I actually really like, he called out all of the fake accounts. So Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram removed 1.6 billion fake accounts. So that's with a B, 1.6 billion fake accounts from their platforms. He doesn't trust influencers whatsoever. And he also calls out Facebook, which I, of course, everyone does, for being unreliable and kind of shady in how they do their metrics and how they report on them, because he's saying that basically bots are using, there's a lot of bots on Facebook and those are inflating views.
Right. He's still kind of the grumpy old man.
I kind of like, but he has billions to back it up. True. If you and I say it, it's like, who cares? But you got this guy. It's great.
Mr. Weed, going out with a bang.
It's kind of like a Clint Eastwood, you know? It's like Gran Torino, like, get off my lawn.
Stop giving me bad metrics. Speaking of bad metrics, no, I shouldn't say that. Someone else we don't talk about much is Apple. And Apple had their big, this is a really consumer product they're launching. And wait, are you an iPhone or Android user? Have you played with the new news product?
I am an iPhone user, but I don't think I've played with the new one yet.
Well, will you be paying? It's $10 a month.
No, then I'm, then the answer is no.
Okay.
I don't want to pay for news. Like, I just, news is free.
You are the problem, JD. You are the problem. No one wants to pay for good journalism, but where it's fair. Fake news. Well, Apple launched it. It's $10 a month. The reviews have said it looks okay. It looks similar to efforts they've tried before. If you're into magazines, it's good because it's mostly magazine content.
Okay.
And, you know, there's been like a billion magazine apps. I remember when iPad launched, it was like, oh my God, there's a magazine app. You could read magazines on your iPad. So people are saying it's really not that revolutionary, but it looks pretty good. And it's only $10 a month. There's also a version if you're a non-Apple user, Scribd, Scribd.com, which is, I guess, apparently what non-Apple users have been using if you want like a magazine subscription to get all the magazines digitally. And there's some newspaper subscriptions too. It sounds like it's still being worked out. But yeah, but nobody wants to pay for news. I do pay. I pay for New York Times to support good journalism. I also pay for Medium to support what Biz Stone is trying to do. Is it Biz that runs Medium? I think so. Former Twitter CEO. To try to, or no, is it Biz or is it, there's Jack, Biz Stone, and the other guy.
The other guy. Because I thought Biz went to, no, I guess Biz is still there.
Biz went back to Twitter.
Back, yeah.
But.
Eric, Evan, Evan.
Evan Williams.
There it is.
Yes. So Evan Williams is trying to do some interesting things with Medium as an like alternative or addition to Twitter for long form and trying to move away from the traditional ad model. We should talk about them at some point. They like pretty dramatically stopped running ads. Like you can't promote or you, well, they're not paying people based on like traditional metrics like clicks. They're trying to get away from the whole system of clickbait drives revenue. Mm-hmm. So I think it's, I don't know how to get on this rant, but I wanted to mention one other thing because I also read, I think it was Vice, did a piece on the king of fake news. I don't know if you've seen that anywhere. So there's this guy who, I forget his name, like maybe 2 years ago, like pre-election, realized that you can make a lot of money just writing fake, literally fake news. Like it says in tiny print at the bottom of his website, this is all fake. This is just a satire website. But he just, whatever the most outrageous headline you could think of, he would just write an article. He had a team of like 30 people writing articles and posting them on Facebook. And as you can imagine, during the election, it would, you know, there was an article I remember seeing that was like FBI agent found like killed in the basement who was linked to the Clinton email campaign or something like that. So it was a lot of like conspiracy theory stuff.
Jeez. Oh,
but this dude was making, I think, $300,000 just making fake news. And he, you know, he did interviews. He's like, yeah, I was just giving the people what they wanted. Not my fault that people are idiots, but, and there's all these screenshots of people on Facebook, like sharing his stuff. It's kind of like an arms dealer. Like, well, I just gave them the guns. If they shoot each other, it's their fault. You know, just gave these kids in gangs guns and I don't feel culpable.
So, oh, geez.
Yeah. Craziness.
Oh, man.
Pay for journalism. Gosh, darn it.
Yeah. Yeah. I may have to. I mean, I do like Apple's stance on privacy, obviously. And I like that with this new news plus that it will, what is it? They're saying that everyone's reading, so everything that you read will be kept totally private. And that includes from Apple and from advertisers. So it's kind of cool. I like that, you know, there's no tracking on there. I can actually like read in peace and not have to worry about some weird ad over here on the right. Like right now I've got one for the RAV4 hybrid. Not in the market for that at all. I don't really want to see that. I don't really care to see it.
But that's because they're not tracking you well. So in fact, if there was better tracking, you would get, you know, like buy new mud flaps for your new
my new Prius,
Subaru, yeah, or your new Prius or whatever the heck you just bought. right?
I mean, flaps for my Prius. No, I think that's the argument. I don't want to be tracked. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. So maybe I will be.
One more tangent. Because you bring this up, I don't know if you've read the Harari books. He wrote, what was the first one he wrote? Sapiens, and then he wrote Homo Deus, and then he wrote, I think, Rules for the 21st Century or something for the 21st Century. Have you read any of these?
No, but I think someone else, or maybe it was you that was telling me I need to read Sapiens.
Yeah, Sapiens is great. I rant about it all the time. People are like, all right, shut up about Sapiens. We get it. But it also was on somebody's top 5 list. I don't know if it was like some famous VC or like Obama, or it was one of those reading lists people still pay attention to. It just came up. It really is worth the read, but it's, you know, it's one of those ones that makes you like your brain hurt. But I'm bringing it up because in the end of Homo Deus, which is, you know, the Homo sapien evolving to Homo Deus, like God, we become gods because we become connected to machines. And now we have, you know, infinite memories and we could live forever possibly because, you know, in 50 years, we'll just be, you know, growing all these fake organs and replacing them. So it's one of those books. Anyway, I'm bringing this up because he has this whole section on tracking and talks about Kindle. Like if Kindle adds face recognition, it can see and biometric scanning. It could watch you read a book and watch you, you know, laugh and cry. And when you put it down, when you get sleepy, and then the next book recommendation is, you know, it's a book that just moves you incredibly because it knows you better than you. And then soon the AI can just write stories for you that are insanely entertaining because they know exactly which tricks, you know, to use on you. And it's frightening and terrifying in some place, but then in some ways, but you know, to your point, do you want a RAV4 ad or do you want an ad that you're like love and think it's hilarious and funny?
Yeah. But how much of that is cognitive bias? You know, if you only see what you like, you live in an echo chamber. I mean, that's like what the Facebook news feed has become, right? You don't see anything you don't really like because that doesn't get you engagement. So we already kind of already have that system.
Right. It's just not very good. It's like, you know, mediocre. So imagine it was super accurate. Then, you know, I guess it depends what you, then it starts getting super metaphysical about like, well, what is happiness and what is the goal of life? And should you even be taking time to read alternative views about like certain topics? But then we'll get super deep. And I want to plug the last story because it's on our own blog, on the AdSage blog. From news and consciousness and the highest, you know, topics we could talk about to super tactical. Hey, on our blog, you can read about 3 bottom funnel strategies to improve your ROI. So nothing like mind-blowingly unique here, but it's a good write-up to talk about how you can use keywords that are bottom funnel. So, you know, instead of doing like normal keywords, you can do keywords like whatever discount codes, because that means someone's right about to buy, or whatever comparisons, because they're doing competitive research, because they're about to buy. Number 2 is SKAGs, which I thought SKAGs were dying, single keyword ad groups, but we think you should keep trying them on our blog, apparently. And then of course, retargeting, you know, if you're not doing retargeting, you're a crazy person, but that's a great way to optimize bottom funnel. What about you, SKAG or no SKAG, or you don't care?
I use SKAGs. I use them when I have a high volume keyword more than anything else. But now it's getting tougher because you would do that with like high volume exact match keyword. But now with Google's like close-ish match exact, it's like, you get a lot of weird words in there. So probably around, like from what I've seen, 10 to 15% of your exact match aren't exactly matched. And so they're
right.
Exact intent, if you will, but that's not that helpful. And so I'm with you. I think if you've got enough volume, go for it. If you can control that ad for that keyword, go for it. So I think it really is like it depends. Only use it when it makes sense.
There's something very nice feeling about isolating like a keyword and the ads and the, you know, like the landing pages to get like a really like end-to-end flow. It makes you feel like you're more in control rather than while everything is moving to, you know, the algo, shared budgets, you know, match types are becoming irrelevant because Google's just creating their own versions of match types. So it's nice to have something like I'm in control.
It's true. And that's what search people are known for.
Very true. That's very, very true. We still have tons of folks use our Automate product for manual bidding when I'm like, you know, they have algos that the engines run, but they're like, nope, I have this thing I do, which outperforms the algo. So power to them. Keep doing it if it's beating the algo.
Go get them. You tell them.
Happy April Fools, everyone. That's all the stories that we have this week. If you want more, you can head over to blog.sh.io and sign up for the newsletter and get them in your inbox every week. All right. Enjoy your week, everyone.
We'll see you later.